Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
It's another installment of Brilliant Boston, where we bring you into some of the most popular classes in our region's many, many universities. Last time it was a Berklee College of Music class that included making music out of brainwaves. But today we're going to Harvard, to the Harvard Divinity School specifically, where Professor Matthew Ishihashi Potts teaches a popular class called Forgiveness. And he's also the author of the book Forgiveness, An Alternative Account. It's a simple word, but a difficult concept. Matt, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Yasmin, for having me here.
Let's start with what made you want to focus on forgiveness.
Well, I mean, lots of things. I mean, maybe the biggest thing is that forgiveness intersects our lives in so many different ways. I mean, every one of us, because wrongdoing is a part of our lives, dealing with wrongdoing is a part of our lives. And I think people are able to think about and interact with forgiveness in every part of their life, personally, interpersonally, but also politically, socially, because wrong is a part of human experience, dealing with wrong is a part of human experience. And so it's just it's kind of a limitless topic for me. There's lots to explore and consider.
And I have to say, I am personally psyched you're here today.
Oh, good.
Our executive producer was making fun of me early because we had this one day where we were sharing toxic traits.
Okay.
And mine is I hold grudges.
Okay.
So this is really good for me. I'm the grudge holder.
Yeah.
But forgiveness, just to, you know, bring this back down, forgiveness is a big ask. And especially when the harm humans can do to one another. I mean, we heard earlier in the show about families in Worcester. Sometimes their families go through unimaginable violence. And so I want to know, how do you contemplate forgiveness when the harm is so immense?
Yeah. I mean, that's a real important question. I mean, I think you said that forgiveness is a big ask. I think it's important for us to think about what we're asking when we ask someone to forgive or when we ask for forgiveness, right? In my view, and this is one of the things we cover in the class, at least in the last few hundred years, other kind of related concepts have seeped into forgiveness. Things like giving up anger or giving up grudges are understood as being the same thing as forgiveness. Or reconciling with someone is understood to be the same thing as forgiveness. I'm not sure those things should be the same thing. I think that maybe it's possible to forgive someone while still being angry at them. Maybe it's possible to forgive someone without being ready to reconcile with them. And part of what the course and my work tries to explore is, what is that moral space which allows us to still be angry or to still mistrust someone or not ready to reconcile, but for us to also say, like, I don't want any more violence. I want to move on. Like, maybe anger and processing anger is part of moving on. Maybe building trust and moving towards reconciliation is part of moving on. For me, forgiveness is more about turning away from, like, retributive violence or retributive harm and less about, like, policing my own emotions or forcing myself to reconcile with someone who hasn't earned it yet. And in that sense, forgiveness is this really important moral concept because it preserves the agency of victims to decide when and how they want to reconcile, when and how they want to feel, with also giving them an opportunity to move beyond the past and move beyond the harms of the past in a real and realizable way.
That's interesting. You're really distilling it because I think I also merged forgiveness, the concept of forgiveness, with other things like reconciliation.
Yeah.
And just controlling your own emotion. But we asked our audience for their thoughts on forgiveness, and we got this response from Rose in Alexandria, Virginia. And if you want to join our texting club to share your thoughts with the show, it's a really interesting topic. Text the word Boston to 617-766-0382. So Rose says, really, forgiveness seems to be just accepting that things are now different than the way you wanted them, and it's moving on to a new chapter with or without the person who was involved in the disappointing situation. Sometimes we can do it, and sometimes we can't. What do you think about that?
I mean, I love that. Thank you, Rose. I feel like Rose encapsulated my position on it, like, more efficiently than my 200-page book, right? I think one of the things I say in my book is that I feel like forgiveness is often aligned with, like, it's thought to be miraculous or magical. But one of the things I say is actually more like mourning. It's moving beyond something we can't undo, right? It's not undoing something that can't be undone. It's actually taking a posture towards a past that can't be undone and trying to figure out how do we move on into a future, right? And in that sense, you know, the same way mourning is a good, not because it feels good, but because it's the way we deal with an irrevocable past or something that's lost that can't be regained. Forgiveness takes a position on the past which says, like, hey, this can't be undone. The harm that was caused is a fact that can't be undone. But what we can do is try to move on into a future. And forgiveness is one of the strategies, I think, that we can use to move into that future. So what Rose said about realizing that what's been done can't be undone, I think that's crucial to any effective or just form of forgiveness.
And I think a lot of people listening, and you're coming at this from also a Christian tradition, yeah. I should mention. And I think a lot of the people listening will be thinking of these two ideas that come out of that tradition.
Yeah.
An eye for an eye, and then another one, turn the other cheek.
Yeah.
Are those two intention?
Yeah, they are intention. I think that's hard not to see them intention. So the eye for the eye teaching comes from the Hebrew scriptures. It tries to suggest, I think, on my reading of it, it tries to suggest a kind of equality. I mean, you think about when this law was first given, you know, a rich man could do anything he wanted to a poor man, right? The idea that every person's eye is worth the same as another person's eye, I think that's part of the equality that is built into that teaching. What's difficult about that teaching or challenging about that teaching is if we interpret it to mean that punishment is demanded when harm is caused. Like, if you harm me, I must harm you in return. Mm-hmm. What I would like to do is think about what other ways can we think about equity and equality. If the real heart of the ancient teaching is about the equality of persons, then how can we think about a justice system that moves beyond simple equations of harm for harm's sake or harm in return for harm and towards other forms of justice, which can be about moving on to the future, supporting a whole community? And I think practices which promote peace and non-retributive, like more like restorative forms of justice, actually do better kind of lean into the equality of persons, the equal dignity of persons. And forgiveness can be a part of that sort of practice.
So context really matters here. And,
yeah.
and a big part of it is the message behind an eye for an eye.
I think that's right.
Equality message. Yes.
That's right. I mean, okay. When Jesus, the other teaching comes from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount when he says, you know, you have heard it said, you know, an eye for an eye, I say to you, love your enemy, turn the other cheek. I think what he's trying to do, and he says that's a fulfillment of the ancient teaching, not an abrogation of it. And I think what he's trying to suggest is that each person is equally beloved of God, to use more theological language. Each person, even your enemy, matters as much to God as you do. That's the sense in which we're equal. Therefore, when you are trying to move on from harm or wrongdoing, treat that person as if they are as beloved as you are. And that's where the kind of the equality of the ancient teaching, I think, shines through or could be understood to shine through in my particular interpretation.
So our community, obviously, you know, multi-religious, some yeah. non-religious, everything in between. And I want to talk a little bit about different not forms of forgiveness, but different approaches to forgiveness.
Yep.
I can speak, you know, growing up in a Muslim home, forgiveness was always, at least in my house, I can't speak on it theologically, but it was always you have to seek for forgiveness before you do anything big that is religious. Like, for example, like if you
yep.
are going to pilgrimage,
yeah.
you're going to have to ask everyone you've ever done wrong yep. for forgiveness. And this idea of always asking your parents for forgiveness. And so the burden, if you will, is always placed on the potential wrongdoer.
Yeah.
And you're even asking for forgiveness for things that you didn't know you did.
Yeah.
I want to hear, like, yeah. what other traditions you've been thinking about
yeah.
when it comes to forgiveness.
I mean, this is one of my real concerns with forgiveness is that, you know, in the wake of wrongdoing, it transfers moral responsibility for repairing the harm from the offender to the victim. Like, now the obligation is upon the person who was harmed to make it right. And that doesn't seem right to me. There are lots of different traditions. I mean, one tradition that's interesting to me, I'm half Japanese. My mom is from Japan. And although I'm not a Buddhist, I have some familiarity with the Buddhist tradition. Within the Buddhist tradition, you know, there's no real direct translation to forgiveness, the language of forgiveness. And even within Christianity, the English word we use for forgiveness, it doesn't really translate the ancient concepts as directly as we might think. But within the Buddhist tradition, there's a sense of forbearance, of patience. So, like, when someone harms you, the idea of forbearance or like restraint from retaliation, I think that's very similar to the way I'm thinking about forgiveness as well, which is not about, again, letting go of grudges or reconciling too hastily, but about sort of showing patience and endurance and forbearance when someone harms you, forbearance and reluctance to retaliate in response. And that sort of establishing the conditions for a way of moving on that is peaceful, to me, it's really at stake in it. And we can look to other traditions to help us think through what that might mean for us.
I'm just hearing, you know, become a higher version of yourself. Yeah. That's really it. It's just, it's a really beautiful way to think about it. But to our listeners, we're speaking with Matthew Echehasi Potts. He's the plumber professor of Christian morals at Harvard Divinity School and a professor of the popular class on forgiveness. So let's shift here to societal versus interpersonal harm, because, you know, it's one thing to consider interpersonal harm and like these maybe sometimes petty grudges you hold against people, but then we can talk about structural harm, especially when it's perpetrated on whole groups of people, racist oppression, patriarchal oppression. And I want to hear how you approach those two concepts. How do you forgive in that context?
Yeah, and this is one of the things I think is really important to me, and one of the reasons why, another reason why I wanted to do some research and do some writing on forgiveness, because a lot of the critiques of forgiveness that exist in the scholarship today are coming out of activist communities, right? Mm-hmm. Are coming out of communities that are saying, like, we're not ready to give up our anger. We are angry. Anger is actually a sign that we have been harmed, and anger is something we want to hold on to. You ought to deal with our anger because it's us telling you something is wrong, right? Or we're not ready to reconcile. Like, you need to earn that. Why ought we to trust you if you haven't earned this? To me, what's really important in that is I want to open up the possibility, especially because forgiveness is such a weighty moral concept, because in so many of our cultures and so many of our lives, it is something we feel we are obligated to do. I want to give people freedom to feel anger, freedom to say, I do not trust you and I don't have a reason to trust you yet, while they're also saying, but I'm not going to retaliate. I mean, I think about sort of the Black Lives Matter protest after the murder of George Floyd, and I think about people in the street who are protesting peacefully but expressing anger, saying there is something wrong, right? But also saying we are not going to rise up in violence. We're going to protest peacefully and demand change with anger, right? I think that being able to understand that, I don't want to, you know, force language upon anybody who doesn't want to use it. But for me, that to me, that's a fundamentally peaceful commitment. It's one that's angry. It's one that demands a just reconciliation, but it's also one that isn't willing to, you know, say everything's fine, everything's okay. You know, forgive and forget's not something I like. Forgiveness as like a way of saying, oh, it's all okay now, it's all over. That's not something I like. I think going out to the streets peacefully and demanding change, even while angry, I want to say that is a moral accomplishment. This is a group of people who on one on one understanding might have the right to expect or want vengeance, but they are turning away from acts of vengeance and instead demanding a better world. That's, to me, that's really what's at stake in forgiveness. And one of the reasons I want to write this book and teach this class is to invite people who are doing that work to think about their work as within the umbrella of that big moral important category of forgiveness.
And so I want to do one more comment from a listener. This is from your Yolette Randolph, and she's talking about forgiveness as a freedom. To me, forgiveness means freedom, and until you forgive, I think you imprison yourself. Yeah. It's hard to forgive, though, because it hurts, but you should force yourself to set aside the pain. I think that often hurt people. Deep down, those who hurt us are themselves hurting in some way. And that's an interesting comment. Yeah. I want to know what you hear about that, especially. You should force yourself to set aside the pain, because we've been talking about that. How do you?
I think it depends what you mean by set aside. I think that we can't stifle pain. I think we need to process pain in healthy ways. But Yolette's comment really reminds me of a philosopher I lean pretty heavily upon in my book named Hannah Arendt. And she talks about forgiveness as a kind of freedom. She worries that we can get embroiled in these cycles of retributive violence, and that the kind of violence and retributive violence can go back and forth like a cycle of retribution, which we can't escape. And she says, like, one of the signs of the human's capacity to be free and to act in the world is that we can decide not to hurt somebody back and try something different. And it really is a way of freeing yourself from the past. Now, it doesn't mean the past never happened. Freeing yourself from the past doesn't mean you forget. It means that you are willing to move on given the past that you have and understanding the wounds that you're going to bear going into your future.
Thank you so much. This was such an interesting conversation. I feel a lot better about how I approach forgiveness personally. That was Matthew Echehasi Potts. He is a Harvard Divinity School plumber, professor of Christian morals, and author of the book Forgiveness, an Alternative Account. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Yasmin.
And having this conversation.